This podcast is going to be on syndesmotic injuries, and this is a little bit different than the podcast on malleolar ankle fractures, where I do touch on syndesmotic injuries a little bit, but I think it's worth having a separate discussion on this, and I think this will be a relatively short discussion nevertheless. Syndesmotic injuries are essentially a ligament injury, also known as a high ankle sprain, when you have more of the sort of pure ligamentous minor variety of these injuries, as opposed to a lateral ligament sprain, okay? So a high ankle sprain or syndesmotic sprain is a sprain of the syndesmotic ligaments. Now remember, you have the anterior inferior tip fib ligaments, the posterior inferior tip fib ligaments, and you have their interosseous membrane. So when you have a syndesmotic injury, there's essentially a rotational injury. It's almost always an external rotational injury that occurs, and you have some degree of ligament injury. Now, I mentioned high ankle sprain because you can sometimes just have a sprain, and the patient may have had an external rotation injury. They often can't tell you exactly what happened, but they had some type of twisting injury, perhaps an athlete on the field, and they have pain, but it's not right over the anterior talofibular ligament, right? It's a little bit more anterolateral, higher up in the ankle, right? A little more proximal, right where the syndesmotic ligaments are in the interosseous membrane, for instance. So something you got to look for. Often you will elicit pain with external rotation of the ankle, okay? Now, this also can occur as a part of a fracture injury complex, right? So supination external rotation, for instance, can have some degree of syndesmotic injury. Now, this may be pure ligamentous injury. This could be a bony avulsions, right? Now, the bony avulsions are going to include the posterior inferior tip fib ligament avulsion, which is essentially the posterior malleolus or so-called Volkmann's fragment, okay? When you have an avulsion of the anterior inferior tip fib ligament off of the tibia, that's called a chaput fragment, or some people also call it a tilo fragment. And when you have that same ligament causing an avulsion of the fibula, that's called a Wagstaff avulsion fracture, and it's far less common. So you can have bony avulsions or you can have pure ligamentous injuries. Diagnosing these, like I said, on clinical exam, you look for tenderness in these areas if you don't have a fracture. If you do have a fracture, there's going to be a lot of tenderness, so you can't just go by that. But what you look for is widening of the syndesmosis, right? So the tib-fib clear space in between the tibia and fibula may widen, okay? And if it widens by a lot, then it's hopefully a very obvious syndesmotic injury. If, for instance, it does not widen by a lot, and you have a lateral malleolus fracture, so let's say what you have appears to be an SER type 2. This is the classic case where many surgeons recommend you consider a stress view. And you may have heard about this, many of you may have done this, but let's just talk about that for a second. So the question is, how do you distinguish an SER2 from an SER type 4 with ligamentous injury? That is a sort of bony equivalent injury where you don't have a medial malleolus fracture, but there's a ligament injury on the medial side, and you have so-called completed the circle of that external rotation injury all the way around the ankle. Now, if you have static images where there's gross medial clear space widening and the talus likely is subluxing laterally, well, then that likely has a syndesmotic injury in addition to a deltoid injury. But if you don't see that and you suspect it, maybe because there's syndesmotic tenderness, or maybe you suspect a deltoid ligament injury from medial tenderness, well, then you can do a stress view. And a stress view essentially is an external rotation mortise view, right? So you have to make sure that when you externally rotate, you end up with a mortise view. And if it's asymmetric or wide, and if you're unsure, you can stress the opposite ankle while the patient's still on the table. Then you may have a syndesmotic injury. And I recommend that you do this yourself, and you keep the patient on that x-ray table so that you do the stress exam, you walk over, if it's digital, hopefully you look at the image right away, and if you need to, you sometimes have to do it again, and sometimes you have to check the other ankle, but this way the patient's not going back and forth, you just get it all done while they're right there. Now, some patients cannot tolerate that, and you just can't do it. So what happens in these situations? Well, I think to some degree, syndesmotic injuries get a little bit too much press, because on a certain level, in these in-between cases, the literature has not really proven it makes a huge difference what you do. But there is some rationale. So for instance, if a patient has an SCR type 2 injury and you're not sure if there's maybe syndesmotic injury, why do a stress exam? Well, because if you do a stress exam and it's totally negative, you should be able to feel confident that you can weight bear that patient and rehabilitate them very early and feel confident that it's not going to come apart. If you're willing to be, you know, and on the other hand, if it's unstable, you have a choice. You can either say this needs to be fixed, or you can treat them ultra conservatively, cast them, keep them non-weight bearing, and check it closely week to week. And certain patients who maybe aren't great operative candidates, that may not be a bad choice, especially if the static images show satisfactory alignment. Okay, we're only talking about, you know, cases where they're, you know, statically okay and then dynamically open, right? I mean, if they're statically wide open, and you know, that's another story. Those need to be reduced. So if you stress them and they're stable, they're non-op. If you stress them and they're unstable, you have a decision to make. If you decide not to stress them, well, then you're a little bit in the dark. But, you know, you may have a patient that's just not a good operative candidate anyway and probably is not going to want to have surgery anyway, so why stress them? So in those cases, you just cast them and then you treat them conservatively, okay? You assume that there might be a syndesmotic injury. You don't let them weight bear immediately, and oftentimes you'll be okay, all right? So I think back in the day, we used to be very aggressive with stressing all these, and if it opened a little bit, that was it. They had to get fixed. More recent literature has shown that it's not absolutely necessary, that you can treat more of these conservatively, kind of like how I described. One other thing, you know, there are controversies about when you fix a syndesmosis, should you use screws or tightrope type fixation, which is a proprietary device, but basically like suture fixation. You know, it's the screws are more tried and true. There is some literature on tightrope and similar fixation, but it certainly, I don't think, considered the standard of care. Another topic is reduction. There's been some literature showing that we very frequently malreduce the syndesmosis. That is, we have a tendency to sometimes cause the fibula to translate anteriorly, for instance, when we apply a clamp to reduce the syndesmosis. That has been shown in some CT studies, and some have advocated that you get intraoperative CT to show that you're well reduced. And others have said that you should open reduce all of these. Now, a very recent study in the Journal of Orthopedic Trauma has shown that maybe it doesn't really matter. Even those ones that were a little bit off clinically, hard to say that it makes a huge difference. So, like I said, I think a lot of the syndesmotic stuff we sort of, you know, we love to argue about and say, you know, what should you do? And then there's other topics, for instance, like, do you put one screw? Do you put two screws? Do you do three cortices? Do you do four cortices? Do you remove it? Do you not remove it? Again, not great literature support one way or the other with any of these. If you have some rationale, then, you know, you stick with it. So for instance, you do three cortices if you want the screw to auto-dynamize. Okay, and you do four cortices if you don't want that thing budging no matter what, and you're willing to either remove it or let it break. I think in general, you do two screws if it's a patient who's either got poor fixation or is likely to be non-compliant or is a heavy patient or something like that. Or, you know, significant widening on initial presentation, like a bad Maisonneuve type injury. And removal versus not removal, my preference is generally to remove them. There is a little bit of literature to support that, but again, I don't think it's very strong argument either way. So my rationale is I do 4 cortices to make sure it's not going anywhere, but then I remove it so that I know that some dynamization can take place and that you don't rigidly hold that syndesmosis in an, you know, sort of non-physiologic fixed position. All right, so I thought this was going to be short, but I've already over my time. So as you can see, a lot of stuff to consider with syndesmotic injuries. I hope this helps explain it for you a little bit. Thanks.